Thank you for choosing to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. In a myriad and plethora of other podcast conversations you could be choosing, we are really grateful that you chose to click on our link. And why should you choose to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast? Well, not least because we have honest, open, insightful conversations with leaders from across the recruitment industry and beyond. We often invite people on who are leaders and experts in markets and sectors that we believe we can all truly learn from. Just a word of thanks to our sponsor, Pager, and to our proud partners, Needy and Inclusion Crowd, and a warm welcome to our new partner, Keybridge IT. More about all of those later on in the show. So without further ado, let's get to know this week's guest. Thank you for joining me on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. And wow, I am recommending you get a paper and pen ready, an old-fashioned paper and pen ready tonight, because you're going to be drawing some little diagrams when we welcome to our podcast today somebody who I've had the absolute pleasure to host in real life for our first ever live podcast show. If you came to that in November 2023, you'll know who I'm talking about. This is Mike Ames, who is the host of his own recruitment show, the Mike Ames Recruitment Show, and he is a founder, consultant of Flair Business Growth, and he is just phenomenal. What we cover today in what is a relatively short interview, the amount of experience and knowledge that he has, we talk about why we shouldn't be hiring in 360 recruiters, basically, and why all recruitment leaders should be considering what he calls the layered approach. He gives some great context to the recruitment industry, how we can all really elevate ourselves as professional services, and what his stance is on why yo-yo companies need to become a thing of the past. How much will AI affect the retained model, the resourcing model, I beg your pardon, and really, what are the best techniques out there for doing business development in the current climate? Honestly, you are in for a treat, whether you're a recruiter starting out or whether you're a recruitment leader or launching on your own. This episode is one for you. So I cannot wait to hear what you think of Mike. And without further ado, let's jump into the episode. We are so proud at the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast to be sponsored by Pager. Pager helps recruiters to build personal brands, to identify new business opportunities, to attract those hard-to-find candidates, and to basically have better conversations. Now, you will have a large network that you want to build credibility with on LinkedIn, and sometimes posting content every day feels impossible. Now, that changes once you have Pager. Pager provides you with the ideas, the content, and the scheduling capability to produce daily content to build out your own personal brand in minutes, and for business development too. Pager identifies companies that are advertising jobs, have key hiring indicators such as funding rounds, mergers, acquisitions, or senior appointments, and then alerts you to this daily. Pager also enables you to write candidate-centric job adverts without bias in seconds. So once you advertise your job, Pager will then automatically create a branded post and publish it to LinkedIn without you even having to lift a finger. So when you want to actively source candidates, you can create complex Boolean strings in seconds. All you need to do is to provide the job title and location. Now, Pager is making thousands and thousands of recruiters smarter and faster. For more information, click on the link pager.co to book your demo, and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when inquiring. Now, back to the episode. This is Leisha Holmes, and I'm your host on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, and I am so excited to have in the studio today somebody who was the absolute star of our first ever live podcast show, which we launched in November 2023 in Manchester. And if you're listening to this now and you were there, please comment on how brilliant this next guest is. We had to get him on the recorded show because honestly, the feedback on you on the feedback forms was exceptional. This is Mike Ames. And if you don't know who he is, you've been hiding under a rock. He's the founder and consultant of Flair Business Growth, and he's the host of his very own show, of which yours truly might have been on in 2024, the Mike Ames Recruitment Show. So welcome to you today, Mike. How are you?
Well, I think we should just end there because I don't think it can get any better than that, quite frankly.
It can't.
No, thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, Alicia. So delighted.
It's a pleasure. And I genuinely think that you are very unique in where you sit in the recruitment market. And not least, we were talking off camera before I pressed record about your unique background before all those years ago. Tell us a little bit about who you are and why you're here today.
Interesting, because I think most people, well, not everybody these days, but when I started, most people had done something else first before they opted into recruitment. These days, people just go from university into recruitment. But I started my career in computer science. So I took a degree in computer science. And then for the first, I don't know, 7 years, I was a programmer, analyst, data analyst, so on. And actually, that time taught me some very important lessons. And I won't go through all of them, but there were three of them I think are terribly relevant for business. The first one is, failure is part of the success cycle. So when you write a computer program, right, it doesn't work first time. Nobody expects it to. You run it, it fails, you debug it, you fix it, you run it again, and so on and so forth. And eventually you run out of failures, and then it's good enough to put into production and people can use it. So failure just wasn't a thing. It was just, well, we just, of course it doesn't work, we'll just fix that. No one expected it to. So that's a really good lesson I took with me in business. Never even considered failure to be a bad thing. Just, well, tried, didn't work. Why didn't that work? Oh, I know, we'll
absolutely
try it. It's an iterative process. That was the first thing. Second thing is IT, right? Obviously, which is why I did my degree in, and I've kind of, although that's the dark ages now in comparison to where we are, but IT is never the solution, ever. It's part of the solution. And I think too many times in my IT career and then in business as well, people have said, oh, this, that, or the other is going to change everything. Right now, of course, it's AI. It's going to change everything.
Which is still tech. Yeah, absolutely.
I definitely think, yeah, it is just tech. It's just computer programs is all it is. So eventually it will completely transform an industry for sure. There is no doubt about that at all. Mm-hmm. However, at the moment, what happens with tech, right, is that tech's launched and that's the hype. It's quite high. People come and think, yeah. They realize the actual ability of the tech is much, much lower than the hype. They become disillusioned, say, oh, that's rubbish, we're not using that, and on they go. Then what happens is the tech catches up and overtakes the hype. And the people that come in then, start using the tech then, when it's better than people thought it were, are the ones that get an edge. And I learned that. Essentially, it's not, and one of the lecturers I remember in one of our lectures back in the late Sev said this, it's not teaching how to make people use your software that you write for them. It's teaching them to make use of it. And there is a difference between them. Use it means you can put some data in this screen and then go to that screen and put some data in. To make use of it means it sits in a much wider context. There's some processes and some checks and measures and balances around it, which makes the tech work. And I learned that, which was really important. The last thing, which was when I was an analyst, you had to deconstruct. So you took a system or a process in a business, and you had to deconstruct it into smaller and smaller components, figure out how you could automate or at least improve those and put them back together again. And I've done that all my business career. And effectively, I get paid to do that now by my clients, really. That's effective. So those three lessons, massively important, I think.
Definitely. I mean, we could talk about each of those three things for at least an hour. There's no question about it. But I love the context that you've given to it. And then, you know, you're obviously very humble about your extremely successful career as a recruitment leader and exit.
I was terribly lucky, actually. Not in the way that most people think. Because recruitment is a broad church, okay? Mm. And I happened, by pure fluke, there was no thought in it, someone offered me a job, right, which as one does, in IT contract recruitment.
Okay. Right?
That's, and I was born in 1960, so I was around about, I was offered the job, I was in my late 20s. And so I happened to be in the right time, at the right place, doing the right thing. And I could easily have been doing $3,000 placements, placing, I don't know, factory workers or something, whatever. But you can't scale those businesses. IT contract is easy to scale and easy to sell. So I was very lucky in that respect. I mean, we did do some things and we took some decisions, some of which will come out, no doubt, when we talk about this, which gave us an edge. But I could have started work in a completely different branch of recruitment and it would have been nowhere near as successful.
True. Yeah, no, I don't think people talk about luck enough, you know. That I think very often that is part and parcel. It's not just luck, it's down to hard work, it's down to intellect, it's down to tenacity, it's down to relationships, it's down to lots of other factors. But luck has a contributing factor. Without a shadow of a doubt, because I think you're right. There's probably people listening now knowing they're in an unfulfilling sector, but know that they could go and make money somewhere else.
You know, that's you see this all the time on the internet, the $1 million biller, you know, it's like, oh,
yeah.
Geez.
Yeah.
$1 million biller, right? Because they make $125,000 placements. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
If you do $4,000 or $5,000 placements, you are not going to be $1 million biller in a gazillion years, right? Unless you've got a team around you. You can't physically do all the work that you do. Don't get suckered in with all that bullshit, really. So,
no, I know, I agree.
It's just, I think it's counterproductive, actually. It makes people feel bad about themselves, which is unjust.
I agree. I did a poll, but by the time this goes out, it will be long gone off my profile on LinkedIn. But I did a poll on exactly that subject. I said, do £1 million billers actually exist? And I haven't revealed the results publicly yet, but obviously by the time we record this, I will have done. And the majority is still billing £150,000 or less. That was over 500 votes. And that's the reality. Most people won't ever bill above that.
In the 90s, a lot of my people were billing £3 and £4 million contract. So that's...
Wow. Yeah.
That is not GP, that's contract. That's their fees, right? Yeah. You're doing about 20% of that. So what is that? I don't know, sort of £800,000, £900,000. But that's contract work, which builds up every month.
Yeah, of course.
You add more to it. Completely different to somebody who's making one placement a month or two placements or three placements.
Yeah, correct.
Not the same thing at all, really.
No.
Wrapped up in that. Don't get suckered into that.
No, I agree. Thank you for that. I think there'll be a lot of people that will probably just be going, phew, I'm actually doing okay. Thank you very much. So one of the things that you're probably most famous for, if people were just to go and look on your profile or just ask the, you know, person in the street who Mike Ames is that you have professed a particular approach to recruitment that you think, if done sustainably and correctly, creates a totally different business proposition, which is the layered approach.
Yeah.
So I know what that means, but can you explain to our audience who might not be familiar with what the layered approach is, what it is, and then we can talk through the benefits of that.
Sure. Okay. So first, very quickly, with your permission, I'll just take 2 minutes to set it in context, because it makes
sense.
So all professional services businesses are made up of four main components. And recruitment to me is a professional service, right? That's how I see it.
Correct. So,
and each component is connected to a key stakeholder group. So you've got your team, your people. There's an engine wrapped around that, which is a mixture of processes and tools and metrics to measure how well it's doing, and people to work in it. And the point of that engine is to attract and engage and motivate and retain and produce maximum productivity from your team. Now, we're not talking about top billers, because that's, again, another myth, right? There's a statistical bell curve, which applies to recruiters like it applies to everything else. And the vast majority of people in it are average. They have to be. So the chances of you getting a team full of top billers, if you're any kind of size at all, is like zero. So what you need to do is build a business where average people can deliver outstanding results. So you're not necessarily hiring the best people, but what you are hiring is the best people for you. Right, that's the first. The second engine is fulfillment, where you put the bum on, which is what recruitment is. I saw recently on a LinkedIn post, recruitment is sales. Okay, well, look, go to your client and say, look, if we just do sales for you, will that be okay? No. What the clients buy is a bum on a seat. They buy candidates who totally match their needs, and they buy a process which is predictable and easy and convenient and matches what they're paying for it. That's what they buy. So fulfillment relates to candidates. You are candidates. That's the second stakeholder group, and that has to be absolutely awesome. The third stakeholder group are prospects. So these are people where they're potential clients, and we want to convert them into clients, and we need an engine to do that as well. And then finally, there's clients. And we need an engine to make ourselves the apex supplier. So we need them to push all the other suppliers gradually to one side, and we become the BSD. Even if there are other suppliers in the PSL, the hiring managers naturally just gravitate to us because we're
What's BSD, sorry?
Big swinging dick. It means...
My God, I never would have known that was the acronym.
It's an American acronym. So it means the big I am, right? The Billy Big Bollocks.
I didn't know what it was.
But you know, it's about providing that service. So you've got those four engines that are triggering away.
Yep.
That's any service industry, any professional service. Mm-hmm. So accountants, lawyers, whatever, consultants, coaches, and recruiters. And on top of that, you've got a big jug of oil and you tip it all over those engines. You make them very smooth and very efficient. And that's called marketing. That's how it works. Okay. And then you've got, obviously, at the side, you've got your back office stuff. And around all of that, you've got like this active management framework. So you know what the hell is going on, not just what you did at the end of the month. You know how each of those components is working to deliver what the other components need, right? That's called a revenue factory. And you can use it in any different format. Part of that, which is the fulfillment part, is where layered comes in, because you can use 360s in there if you want. You can use layered or you can use a blend of the two. So you can see where it sits. It's a crucial part of the business, very focused on the resource, which is candidates, contractors, temporaries, whatever it is that you place. And the idea is to get really good ones and then put them into jobs. That's what it is. That's where you make them. And that is the thing that the client actually buys from you. It doesn't buy the rest. You do that for your own purposes. It buys placements. Okay, so does that make sense as to where it fits in the big
picture? Yes, and I'm really glad that you did contextualize it, because otherwise it wouldn't have made real sense what we were about to talk about. But I just, you know, just as a little pause, without the fulfillment element of what you've said, what are we selling? So I agree with what you said. I've always sort of shirked away from anybody that talks about recruitment as a sales profession. I've always seen us as much more holistic than that. And what you've described there, you know, that the oil on the top, the marketing, but all the cultural aspects, the training development, the, you know, the social responsibility stuff that we're all doing now, sustainability. I think it's such a beautiful picture that you presented there. And then if we then bring fulfillment back in, which is what most people listening to this will sit probably within that. We do have a lot of leaders listening as well, but I think it's really good how you described it and positioned it.
What you have to remember is that, you know, clients find that fulfillment is what they actually want. That's what they pay for.
That's what paying for. Of course it is.
That's what they're paying for. And it's absolutely crucial that you finish anything that you start for them in a way that they're very happy with. So my boss used to say, it doesn't matter how many boxes you've ticked, if the client's not happy, your job ain't finished, right? So that's
exactly
kind of the key thing. But there's an interesting thing about this. I don't know whether you've you know the comedian Steve Martin.
Yeah, of course. I was just about to say,
he did an interview, right, on TV, and he was interviewed by the American version of Michael Parkinson, who's interviewing him. And this guy said to him, well, look, Steve, what advice would you give for somebody who wanted to be successful in comedy? Yeah. And he said, what people often want me to say is, this is how you get an agent, and this is how you get a director, and this is how you get a script. He said, none of those things actually are true. You've got to be so good that they can't ignore you. And your obsession has got to be making yourself better and better and better. It's exactly the same in recruitment.
Yeah, I agree.
You've got to be so good at understanding the vacancy, identifying potential candidates, qualifying and filtering them, and then making the placement at the end of it. You've got to be so good at that.
Yeah.
Once they've used you once, they're going to use you every time. And I don't think enough people are obsessed with that as they should be. It should be an obsession. Every morning, how can we make our fulfillment be a little bit better? Because that's the thing that's going to get your business. Because people will say, we use these guys, they're brilliant, actually. I love the way they do things. But I accept all the other things that you said. We run these growth summits once a month, right, in person.
Yeah.
We had someone on a few months back, and he was a TA originally, and then he'd switched across, started his own business, and he was going with that. And he was talking, we were talking about client care, and he said, we had someone who came to us, and a very efficient way of opening a conversation with us. We were knocked out how he made the approach, and we loved it. And he really nailed client care. I mean, he understood it. He did all the right things with client care. He understood about us as a business. He understood us about people, what we were interested in, built a relationship with us, moved us from the client zone into the friend zone, did all the right stuff, trips to the cricket, you know, you name it, he did it. He said, but every time I tried him out with an opportunity, he fluffed it. It was rubbish, and we couldn't use him in the end. And it was embarrassing because he was inviting me to all of these things, and I thought, I can't go because I can't give you any work. So having the stuff that goes with it is great, but only for the fulfillment.
The substance has to be there.
Let's go to the layered model, because this is where it comes in now. So with the 360, we all know 360s, which is not really that popular in America or other parts of the world, but for some reason it is in the UK.
Okay.
It's like you hire someone and they can do everything. So
360.
They can go out and they can win clients and get vacancies, and they can find candidates and qualify and do the placement and then nail the next one. But having said that, pretty much the majority of people in recruitment are average, because they have to be, according to Standard distribution curve. Well, you're asking an awful lot, aren't you, really? I mean, in the good times from 2012 to last year, really, not so bad because work was finding you, but those days are gone now and probably aren't going to come back anytime soon. So you've got to go out and win business. Well, that's blooming hard. The other thing is what 360s do is they chase the golden egg. They're looking for
Yeah,
the
of
golden
course. All the
egg.
time.
Is you should be chasing the goose that lays the golden egg. Completely different. Not the same thing at all. The way in which you approach it, what you do to get it, what you do when you've got it, completely different. Different skill levels, different mentality, everything's different. And if you talk to recruiters, 95% of what they say will be focused on tactical business development, getting a vacancy really, or making some money now. Because they're measured and rewarded at the end of the month, that is their vision, right? So if it goes much better, a lot of them not interested. Got to go and get some dough, right? Got to get some money. Well, that's not how you scale a business at all. It just
No,
isn't.
it's very transactional, isn't it? And it's very short-sighted, like you say.
It
It's
is.
the smash and grab. Unfortunately, that's kind of the ethos, which hasn't changed since. I mean, I've been in recruitment 26 years. That's still very much the ethos, which is why I do absolutely, concur that having a different approach to it and changing the mindset of those leaders listening is really vital if you want to thrive. Where I agree with what you just said there, by the way. I think that the golden years, the bubbles burst, and this now, how we are now in 2024, is probably how it will, this is recruitment now. This is the recruitment landscape,
This is
and I
how it was in
can't see
the
it
90s.
changing.
This is exactly how it was in the 90s, pretty much like
I
this.
agree.
The business is there,
Totally.
you've just got to fight for it, and you've got to
It's
be.
how you do, it's how you do it,
You've
without a
got to be
shadow of a
bigger than
doubt.
that. Yeah,
So,
you
given
do.
that most people, I agree with you, and actually, what's really great is that we do have a global audience, Mike. We've got, I think it's about 25% of our listeners are over in America. So, I'll be interested to know from our American friends on the in our community what they see as the general approach. But in the UK, most of our listeners are in the UK. About 55% are UK based. So, why do so many business owners launch as a 360 model? Why do you think that is?
Because for two reasons, really. The first one is where they came from. What they thought was 360, they work for Michael Page and they're classed as a 360, but they're not really, because you've got the Michael Page name and the Michael Page brand and Michael Page marketing, the Michael Page resource and administration. So they're doing a lot of that stuff, So a lot of inbound leads, which they just take and take as their own. They think that they're 360s. I think, and that's the first reason. Well, that's what we've always done. So that's what we'll carry on doing. And the other thing I think, for some people, not for everybody. So if you're not this person, then that's fine. But some people, it's a lazy person's way to growing a business. It's like I sit back with my feet on the desk, and all these 360s are out there getting business and filling it, and it's just not going to happen, right? Which the average number of employees in the United Kingdom recruitment companies is seven, right? So, and there's some very big businesses in there. So obviously, there's a lot of very tiny businesses as well. And the reason is some people don't want to grow, right? And I admit that, that's fine. But others do want to grow and they can't because they're pushing a model which is deeply flawed. It's very hard to find people that can do all of that. Or they say they do because that's what they think that you want to hear. And then they come in and they really hate dealing with candidates or they really hate business development. So you've got a person hired to do a job that they can't do. That's not going to end.
Absolutely. No.
Or they are good at what they do and they suddenly realize they're good at what they do and they think, I can do this for myself, which everybody listening to this podcast who started their own business is probably because they were good at 360, probably,
Oh,
right?
100%. I was going to make that very valid point that as a business leader, thinking about growing out a model of a 360, you're creating future entrepreneurs. That's what you are actually doing. If they're any good at it, I was that person. I was naturally just, I loved the whole process. I was hired to be a 180. I'm going to break the model here. I was hired to be 180, but I just got so frustrated with the sales guy because he was so protective of his client. I was like, let me just ring your client. And in the end, the client would only speak to me. And then I would use that as a, testimony to ring
You're
other
in the
clients.
top. You're in the top 15%, though, Alicia, and most of those top 15%, not all, of course, but most of them run their own businesses. So you're not going to get them anyway. Okay,
No.
so you're trying to build a model with people that it's going to be difficult or impossible to find.
Very.
Why not keep them? And the other thing is, if they leave, they're going to take a revenue stream with them, right? That's
Absolutely.
so you become what's called a yo-yo company. You grow, you shrink, you grow, you shrink. And normally the reason that you shrink isn't because you've lost a client, it's because you've lost a biller or a couple of big billers.
Absolutely. I mean, look, having this whole conversation is potentially going to damage my actual day job, key recruitment, because this is why people come and talk to me, guys. If you're listening now as a leader, they are not leaving because the market, they're not leaving because there's not enough candidates or clients, it's because they're not enjoying one element of their job. And I genuinely think, as a, you know, as a human being, as a more mature person, as a, I'd like to think I'm a bit wiser, life is too short to do something that you're not in natural flow. I'm not saying don't be open and receptive to learning, developing, you know, pushing yourself, challenging yourself, but naturally people are either better at one thing or another. And that's why I like the layered approach, because it plays to people's strengths.
I'm going to break down the blend, the layered model in a minute, so the components, so you can see what they are.
Yes, but I'd please. Say
this. If anyone's interested in a case study of this, if you go to my YouTube channel, which is the Mike Ainsley
Recruiter,
and search in terms of most popular, you know, you can sort at the top.
Yeah, cool.
The most popular. The one that comes out top is an interview with a guy called Matt Ellis. And what Matt Ellis did was he converted from a 360 model, which was a yo-yo, grow, shrink, grow, shrink, 19 years. Mm-hmm. It was that right. And he comes on the show. He had a very high turnover of staff, 30% plus some years, and implemented the full revenue factory, included a layered model. But he's blended in the end. He had some 360s, which he kept, which is fine. Yeah. Just didn't hire anyone, right? So he moved over to this. And people had the choice to move across if they wanted to, which is fine. And he saw a trebling of his profits, and they were quite big to start off with, right? It tells you the story there. It's not out of my mouth. It's out of his. But his attrition rate dropped to 3% a year.
Most
of those people left because he wanted them to leave, right? So because people are now doing what they like, what they're good at, and what has the biggest impact. Now, we say that when I work with leaders of recruitment firms, I always say, well, as the leader, what you need to do is build that business so that you just do what you're good at, what you like, and what has the biggest impact. Why would you do anything else? Well, why is that not true for other people then? Because they're going to be happy, they're going to be more productive, and you're going to get more bangs for your bucks. So I think it's really important that you recognize that a stable team of average people is always going to out-deliver a volatile team of comers and goers, of the odd great person here and there. Always will
out-deliver. Agreed.
Right? Always. Hey. So, and that's in your team engine. That's your team engine's job to build that team and keep it going, right? Anyway, so a layered model. Let me best way to describe this without PowerPoint. Here we go. Imagine three circles on a page, bump, bump, bump,
right,
next to each other. But the first circle overlays with the second circle.
Yeah.
Second circle overlays with the third circle. So it's like a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Right? And each one of those relates to a stakeholder group. So the first one relates to resource, contractors, candidates, temps, interests, whatever. The second one is clients. And the third one is prospects. Okay so where just pure resource, so it doesn't overlap with anything, there's two things in there: matching,
right?
You've got a requirement and you're looking online, LinkedIn, the register, whatever you've got, really find people that match that at headline level. We would outsource that to India now. Well, there's apps coming on the market now, they're rubbish, but they're going to get better, that will do that for you. Second is outreach and filter, where someone has to pick up the phone and say, right, well, listen, we've got this vacancy, you look okay for it, this is the headlines of it, are you interested? I paraphrase that, of course, before people say he's got no idea. But someone says, yeah, I'm interested, and I'm not. If you're interested, well, I'll book you a call with the consultant then. And that is the where the resource and the client circles overlap. So these are people who are talking to candidates and taking a medium list and creating a short list. Are they suitable and are they serious for this role? And then what they're presenting that to the client, making the placement, the interview, yada, 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 yada. The bit of the client circle, which is pure, which doesn't overlap with anything, that's really about client care. It's about how you make people feel, especially when there's no vacancies. What do you do with your clients when there's no work?
Absolutely. Insights, salary surveys.
Just
bringing them on a pod.
The best thing you can give people, you know, is your time, weirdly. That's the best.
I agree totally.
And also a feedback on your service level. So client quality management with your with Then the bit that overlaps between the client and the prospects, that's tactical BD. So that's people. You're getting vacancies from existing clients, you're going out to new clients and getting spot deals, you're going for the eggs, gives a piece of work, or I've got this great candidate, would you like to see them? Which doesn't work as well now in today's market, obviously, but so that's where that is. It's tactical BD. Get a bit of revenue, get a transaction on the go. And then the bit which is purely prospect, that's strategic BD. That is now where we are focusing entirely on the clients that we want to win. So we've got, you know, that 80-20 rule. So 20% of your clients generate 80% of your revenue, roughly.
Yeah.
So why don't we win more of the 20 percenters. That makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Tactical business developers go wherever. They talk to a candidate. And the candidate says, oh, I've just been brought forward for this interview at so-and-so. So they chase over and try and get the vacancy, or they learn that someone
lead.
A job. Ah, backfill, right? So absolutely fine. If that's what you want to do, it's not my way, but if that's what you want to do, that's fine. That is tactical BD. That is not strategic BD.
So the same thing. It's reactive, isn't it? Tactical, whereas strategic. Well,
very much so. Yeah, it's a golden egg. Yeah. It's a one-hit wonder. Now you can win bigger clients from that. Of course you can. It's less relevant in this market because people don't have to give strangers that have approached them via the telephone or email a vacancy or look at the CV from them as much as they did, because of course there are less vacancies and more people around. So the existing incumbent agencies are doing a little bit better than they were, right? So you can speak and still do it. But really, why not draw up a list of 100 target clients who are the 20 percenters? They are the geese that lay the golden eggs. Why not do that? And then have a structured approach, which has six different conversation starters, which we try one every 3 months until we've exhausted them all to get a conversation with this person in our list. And then when we get a conversation, we've got a structure, a soft pitch, we call it, that is going to create some interest. And it's either going to result in a piece of work or maybe an opportunity for you to present your product or service in a more detailed way.
Right. Okay.
There's a way of doing that, which I'm very happy to share on this podcast if we have time. Right. Okay. So devil's in the detail. But why not do that? Because what's going to happen out of those? There's three things that drop out of that. No, I don't want to deal with you. Cough and die. Okay. Well, we've all had that.
Okay, so we have.
And we're going to replace them with somebody else, because there's always 100 names in the list, always, at all points, right?
So there's always somewhere else to go and prospect.
There's always someone doing that. You're processing them all. This is a very easy process to manage if you're in charge of something. You can manage this process very easy. You can make sure your business partners are targeting the right people because you've told them who to target. And you can make sure they're targeting them in the right way because you're giving them the conversation starters, right? Mm. And then the second thing is they want to do business. Great. Give you a vacancy or ask you to submit a proposal or whatever it is that you need to do. Great. But then you've got 45% of the people you approach during that soft pitch and the full pitch that follows it, who are, it's not a no, but it's not a yes. The forgotten.
Not yes yet.
Not a yes yet. So they're forgotten 45%. And the reason they're forgotten is transactional recruiters don't care about them because there's no money now. And yet there's nine times as much revenue in there.
Crazy.
Who say, let's do some business now. So what you need to do then is put them into a very simple cultivation regime. It's got three tiers to it. It's very manageable. As you're the manager, you can see exactly whether this cultivation regime has been implemented properly. And the idea is to give you a platform to build rapport, to build trust, and to build confidence. And we always say, we tested this phrase, it doesn't matter if the way in which we do things is to your tastes, if our flavor of recruitment works for you, it doesn't matter whether we wait 3 weeks, 3 months, or 3 years. Provided we know there's a synergy between us, we will wait. And when our time comes, we'll be ready for you.
That
is the narrative around strategic BD. It's not how quick you get the work. That's a myth. No. A strategic approach.
You're not going to get a quick win. Of course.
You will actually. You are more likely to get a deal if there's one available right now when you ring in. If you go in with the, look, I'm just here to make sure that we're on the same page. And we'll wait if we need to, because you are no longer sounding desperate. You're no longer in a
chasing
position.
The deal. You're not sounding like everybody else. That's the reality, right?
If you ever taken a reference on a candidate, right? You ring in, take the reference, and you do a proper job on it, like a real proper, understanding whether this person is right for this role or not. Very often, either the person you're taking the reference will say, "Well, actually, we've got a little vacancy. Would you like to help us with it?" Right, or you can on purpose flip it and say, look, I don't normally do this, but would there be an opportunity for me to explain how we do things? Because, and this is the thing we tested, right? You'd say, over a number of years, what we've done is constantly reach out to our clients, get feedback, and we've constantly refined in lots of small ways, marginal gains.
What
we have now is something that's very distinctive. Not everybody likes it, but those that like it really like it. And I would love the opportunity to explain what that is. And by the way, every single claim I make in there, every single claim I can prove beyond a shadow.
You can prove it. Yeah, yeah.
To do that. So, you know, if they love their existing clients, supplier base, anywhere with that's fine. Very few people love all the agencies that they use.
I was just about to say, usually it's a need, a means to an end, needs must and everything. But just to pick up on, I mean, I did actually write down, I don't know if anyone else listening has done this, I did actually do my little Venn diagram. Last time I did a Venn diagram, I think it was 1990, my maths exam. The problem you have, if we go to the very first circle, which is the resource capability, they are very often being asked to do that strategic business development because business is tight and nobody's got vacancies. And this is where, right from the start of the market decline at the beginning of 2020, well, end of 2022, I was like, this is all going to go horribly wrong for a lot of companies because you're asking the wrong people. It's like asking, you know, a horse to go and play in the, you know, play England in the Euros. It's a sport, but it's the wrong sport. And I just think this is where, for me, it seems a much more sensible, calmer, professional services solution to put the right people in the right positions because they know what they're doing. And it just feels more accomplished and less risky. I don't understand why for the last 18 months, all we're getting told as a supplier to our own industry is we don't want anybody that wants delivery or account management. And I'm like, why? Because how can you fulfill what your clients need if you're not actually having somebody? So I love how you've presented this today. And I do hope people will go and watch that YouTube with Mark. Because it sounds like, I mean, actually, I haven't watched that one. So I will go back and watch that one.
We've also got a webinar on demand. If you just reach out to me, LinkedIn or something.
Oh, great.
The link. It's on demand. You don't have to register or anything. I'll just send
you
a link. But it explains how strategic BD works. It's 90 minutes, so it's very in-depth, very particular. And for those who are members of our community, if you're listening to this, you can also go and watch a similar workshop that we did on conversation starters, how to start a conversation with high-value clients that don't want to talk to you. 90 minutes, you can watch that. So speak to Pete about that. But
I think that's very often, because I'm really interested in the psychology of why people are seemingly, you know, competent 360 when I really lift the lid on what they do and how they do it and where they've done it and who they've done it with. And very often it is literally that. It's just knowing what to say because they've never had to.
No,
and I think that webinar could be a really useful one for them, actually, because if you're not sure how to start a conversation with a potential strategic client, you're never going to probably pick up the phone to them.
Yeah, it is important. And what you can do, because what you have to do is, like I said, you have to de-skill the process so average people can deliver outstanding results. Also, in the scale of a business, you can't have key person dependence. So if any part of your business depends upon a named individual for its success, you are not scalable. Because sooner or later, that person will be frustrated, or they'll leave, or they'll have some sort of hideous nervous breakdown, or they'll set their own business or whatever. And then that function that they do is broken. So anytime someone says to you, I know what will cure that problem, we'll hire someone. They're not quite getting it really, right? The solution, they aren't the solution. So the way in which you do that isn't process, which a lot of people think, because quite frankly, process is best practice, that's fine, but you really have to monitor adherence to that best practice on a day-to-day basis to make sure it's being followed, and you won't, so it just drifts off. The difference is tools, right? The difference, not software, I don't mean that for a second, but the difference is tools. If you tool people up, what all tools do, whether it's in the kitchen, the garden, the workshop, wherever, is they de-skill, they simplify, they speed up, and they standardize any task that they're applied to. So if you're heavily tool-based in your business, and I do stress, I don't mean software. It can be part of it, but it's not the whole solution. So if you tool up, and I'll give you an example, a couple of examples of this in a minute, right? To illustrate the point. But if you tool up and train people how to use the tools, then average people can deliver outstanding results.
Yeah, I agree.
If you had to do a process, no chance. Good luck with that then. So I'm not saying don't have processes, for sure, but not really where the big money is. And I think a conversion across to a tool-based system, which is layered, so every person in there is maximum productivity, which is about training and management and the right tools, I think you'll get the most out of your business. And like Liv and Matt Ellis on the guy on the YouTube channel, you know, you are going to see an increase in revenue, because one of the things that you should be obsessed with as the leader of business is every morning when you get up, every night when you go to bed, the only thought in your head should be, how can I lift revenues but keep costs the same?
Just develop
a second. What that means is 80% of the additional revenue you bring in go straight to the bottom line. So when you see case studies like Matt, and I've got loads of them on video, if anybody wants them, I'll send them over. But every time that you see that spike in profit, it's not because they've done anything massive on their revenues. What they have done is control costs, keep them the same, and whack revenues
Correct.
through. Right, there's another video on that YouTube channel that gives you 10 ways that you can do that. I can't remember where it is, and it's
Oh
not
no,
too.
but people, I think people are gonna, I think your views will go up because people are gonna go
Oh,
head over there
probably.
anyway because
That's a really
it's
good
so
one.
valuable.
That is about lifting. It's all about lifting revenues. It's what most people do when they think of growth, Leisha, is hire some more people. Well,
I
yeah,
know.
that's okay. That's all right. But you should only hire people when you've got your productivity to its maximum level. Then you hire again. Your productivity drops, obviously, because you've got
Yeah, of
people
course.
on delivering. Get productivity back up to where it was before, then hire again.
And then
So you're
hire
hiring
again.
steps. You don't just say, oh, well, we'll hire the five people this year. Well, what? How do you know that's the right thing to do? It's all about profit. Profit, profit, profit.
I genuinely think you should be shouting this from the rooftops, Mike. This is why I was so desperate to get you on because you are the voice of reason. And it's almost like it what you've just said there, that last part seems almost counterintuitive to what we as recruitment industry leaders should be saying. But actually, I totally agree with everything that you've said there. For me, success comes from that profit and from the people that are making the profit and not these vanity metrics that I mean, if we hear a client and genuinely any of my clients that have known me a long time will be agreeing that they know this is what I say. They go, yeah, we want to grow headcount by 50 this year or 5 this year. And I'm like, whoa, really? As opposed to organic growth,
It
which is
is,
what you're
right?
talking
It's
about.
how much extra profit do you want to make this year? That's the question. Okay, well, let's think how we can do that. Yeah, we might need to hire some new people because you can't grow without hiring at some point. But
Course.
really, what we're interested in is how we can hit those profits. And there are lots of ways that you can list revenues without lifting costs. And that's what I like about it. 80% of the extra revenue, straight to the bottom line. It's
Feeds straight back in.
amazing.
Who isn't going to want to know about that?
Well,
Honestly, Matt,
you
that's
good, I think, really. But the other thing about this as well is that I've been banging on this for years because in the 90s, we made some very bad decisions and nearly went bankrupt on two separate occasions because I had a business that was high growth, had a business that was very profitable, had a business that didn't need me all the time, but I wasn't safe. People don't understand they've got to grow a safe business as well. And we found a little bit of this in 2020. Little bump in the road, everyone's panicking, sacking people, making bad decisions. It's like now, like you were saying earlier, Alicia, little bump in the road, I'll get everybody selling then. Well, that's a bit of a knee jerk, isn't it? And it's a knee jerk because you don't have enough cash in the business. You should have at least 6 months operating profits. In Recruitment Pioneers, which is my business, we've got 12 months operating money just lying there. So we can manage 12 months without earning a bean. That changes the way in which we see the world. Also, your client estate is too small. If you've only got two major clients in your client estate and you lose one of them, potentially a big chunk of revenue, right? So that's wrong. Key person dependency, too much dependency on named individuals. They go, well, what happens? So these are not
True,
safe.
yeah.
One of the things that we do with our clients, with our private clients, not the ones that are on the breakthrough program, is to assess their safety levels. Because, man, if you're not safe, you should have your risk register, and the things that are a problem should go on the risk register, and you should take actions to clear them off that risk register. Because if you don't, and something bad happens, you can lose everything. And I know that because I came within a cat's whisker of losing my whole business
And
on two separate.
you're sharing that with a lot of other
Because
people and that
I didn't
is
understand how
I love
safe.
that you're sharing I love that you shared that and I'm so sorry we're running out of time, Mike. We could talk about this for another hour, but I think that sort of last component of what you've said, I think there'll be a lot of leaders that will have to go and look in the mirror after they've listened to this pod because I think having supported recruitment industry as a rec to rec for over 21 years, I think that not many people actually face the risk. Even though we think we're risk averse as recruitment leaders, really they're not. People gamble on the vanity metrics instead of looking at the components of what you've
Think they're
just said. So I think that's
subconsciously taking,
vital.
aren't they? They're subconsciously taking the risk. They don't know they're taking the risk. They think everything's fine because they haven't understood what safe means. When you do, it's like, oh my God, I'm nowhere near that. Well, every day you go to work, something bad could happen. So.
Well, it could. Well, hopefully we're ending on a positive note though. And there's so much value in your YouTube channel. People can find you on the Mike Ames Recruitment Show. Anywhere else we can go and find you? Any other links you want us to share?
LinkedIn. If you check me out on LinkedIn, that's where we put most of our content and everything spins
Yeah,
out.
same. Yeah, what would we do without LinkedIn? Thank you so much. I mean, literally, to open your brain and pick out all this amazing knowledge when you've got as much knowledge as you have, we probably need about two or three more shows. This won't be the last time you're on this, don't you worry. Thank you so much for joining us on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
We are thrilled to welcome to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast a new partner in KeyBridge IT. KeyBridge provide 24/7 support to all of their customers. Established in 2010, KeyBridge IT Solutions is a London-based, fully managed IT support and solutions provider. And for recruiters like me, we all need the IT expert to sort our problems out, whether it's with Microsoft Cloud, Microsoft 365, internet connectivity, security, Microsoft Azure. I mean, all these words actually mean nothing to me. What about you? But so much more than that. They work across many industries, not just recruitment, but if you're listening from the world of leisure or charity or finance or even marketing, they will be able to help. So click on the link in the podcast show and get to know KeyBridge IT. We are so proud to be partners of Needy, the gifting revolution. Here at Key Recruitment, we absolutely love to send out bespoke gifts to our new place candidates to welcome them in their new jobs, but also as an extra special thank you to clients or when a team is celebrating something really special. But to be honest, we were really fed up with dull or mediocre gifts that you could just buy on the high street that didn't really reflect who we are at Key Recruitment as a business. This is why we chose Needy. Needy source sustainably from the UK's best independent businesses, offering the most perfect array of bespoke gifts and experiences too. So no more boring bottles of plonk or rubbish boxes of chocolates. This is how you make your customers' day with a gift that really matters and shows that you really want to do something special for them. For more information on how psychology and AI forming to make the best gift experience for you, click on the link and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when ordering. The Recruiters Recruitment Podcast is thrilled to be partnering with Inclusion Crowd. Inclusion Crowd put the D into diversity, but do it disruptively. We love that. Really reflecting what we're about. I was introduced to Inclusion Crowd back in 2020, and I've been absolutely blown away with what they're doing to totally transform the recruitment and hiring sector. They believe at Inclusion Crowd that companies should be reflective of society, and that no matter who you are listening now, you have a story to tell. You have a contribution to make. An Inclusion Crowd educates you in allowing your voice to come out and share that story, but doing it in a way that educates your colleagues and your customers equally. Inclusion Crowd, like the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, has clients all over the world, and they specialize in our industry. What we all want to do together is to maintain best practice and to raise industry standards to enable us to attract and retain the best talent, but doing so inclusively and with true diversity. By doing this, by accomplishing a true EDI policy within your business, you will also retain the top talent as well as attract new talent, which is a win-win for everybody listening, making more profitable business and a much better industry, highly regarded. Inclusion Crowd are also the official awarding body for the Inclusion and Diversity Certification Mark within recruitment. We are so proud to be assisting and partnering Inclusion Crowd. If you want to know more information, please click on the link in this episode and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when you do so. Now, back to the episode.